Welcome to a special trade legislation edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm dumbfounded. I'm Ken Rudin.
I think you are dumbfounded because I didn't really prepare you for the need to really bone up on our new trade agreements with Panama,
South Korea,
and Colombia.
But I think it's more important with Silver Spring because it's much closer than Colombia, because Colombia's up on, you know.
That is an inside the beltway, outside the beltway joke, and we don't allow those on the podcast.
You allow jokes?
We are. Actually, as everyone knows, this is really the Herman Cain edition of It's All Politics from NPR.
You know why I know that? You know, I've been sick all weekend.
Yes,
you know.
And you've been terribly sick for a great number of years.
I knew I was very sick because when I called an ambulance, I died. 999.
Yes,
I knew right away that was a mistake.
Let me just say, I think it's a miracle that if you take 9%, 9%, and 9% on the three kinds of taxes that Herman Cain wants to have, including a national sales tax, you get exactly, precisely the same amount of revenue that we get from the current system. Isn't that a miracle?
There was a debate this week, Tuesday night.
What? Yes, there was a debate?
Sponsored by the Washington Post and Bloomberg Television, moderated by Charles
Rose. What if I don't get Bloomberg Television on my cable package?
Well, I do, and I watched it. So I watched it. And anyway, whenever Herman Cain was asked, you know, they said, well, these numbers don't add up, he says, you're incorrect.
He would just say, that's wrong.
That's wrong.
That's wrong. They do add up. In fact, they add up to 27. But at any rate, I think I think that there is a growing sense in the country that what they want is a simple solution that they can grab onto.
Who
are like
they?
A medium-sized pizza with a salad. Who are they? All right, who are they? We really have to deal with this because we now have a presidential race in which several polls, including the prestigious NBC Wall Street Journal poll, right, have installed Herman Cain as the leading candidate for the Republican nomination for president. Herman Cain, former CEO, president of Godfather Pizza.
It's your fault, because you decided to anoint frontrunners from the beginning.
Radio talk show host has now become the leading candidate in the polls.
Right.
It's a plurality for the Republican presidential nomination against Barack Obama.
Do we believe that Herman Cain is the nominee, Republican nominee for president?
That is the question I am putting to you, Ken.
Absolutely not.
All right. And
absolutely
what's going to happen? What's going to happen to bring his numbers down? Or let's put it this way. Are all those people who are telling pollsters right now they're for Herman Cain, are they really for Herman Cain?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they are. I think they like the new idea, just like Michelle Bachmann was the new idea for 15 minutes, that Rick Perry was the new idea for 15 minutes. I'm most fascinated by Rick Perry's decline. And we keep saying, well, you know, he had three bad debate performances in a row. This will be better because the Washington Post-Bloomberg debate was sitting around a table. It will be a different dynamic.
That was a different dynamic.
It
did sit at a table.
And Rick Perry offered absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
What's your plan? Well, I haven't come out with it yet. It's about energy.
Yet.
It's a lot about energy, and I'll be unveiling it soon as I read it. That's what it sounded like.
And he
to
repeated
me
several times a wonderful poll-tested line that I'm sure gets good reaction, which was, we've got to get America working again. But about the third time he said it, you wanted to hear something more. We didn't hear anything more. He had nothing else to put out. And he had a couple of questions that he asked of Mitt Romney, but Mitt Romney turned the question back on him about kids who didn't have insurance, health insurance. And it wasn't a terrible performance like the second or third debate.
I thought it was worse because he had been reading how bad his reviews were. So I thought this was even worse because this was an opportunity, allegedly, for him to just suddenly break out from his doldrums, and he didn't do it. What I thought was most illustrative about the changing dynamic of the debate was that when Rick Perry was able to question one of his opponents, so he questioned Mitt Romney, he brought up Glenn Hubbard, who's a Romney supporter, and said that Glenn Hubbard has some questions about Romney care. So I would have thought that this is a great opportunity for Mitt Romney to throw back the words of Robert Jeffers, the Texas evangelical who talked about Mormonism being a cult, Jeffers being a big Perry supporter.
Right, and this was at the Values Voter Conference last weekend.
The previous weekend. He had the opportunity to do it. Instead, he asked a very inane question to Michelle Bachmann. So, Michelle Bachmann, what do you plan to do to create jobs? Which let me think that
he doesn't care about Perry anymore.
He didn't care about Perry anymore.
Yeah, and it's amazing the degree to which Perry just didn't seem to ever find an opening in that debate. The first hour, two-hour debate, first hour, he's scarcely spoke. He scarcely had any kind of part in the debate at all.
Part of it was the obsession with Herman Cain in 999. That was part of it. He became, as we said, the flavor of the month. So all the focus seemed to be on Herman Cain. But, you know, we keep talking about, well, Perry, you shouldn't count Perry out because he has $17 million. He's raised a ton of money. He's going to put on these nasty commercials. But if all we see of Rick Perry is somebody who cannot coherently argue the merits of his candidacy during these debates, then I don't think all the campaign commercials in the world will save him.
No, I don't either. And he's got another debate coming up, which I don't think is even necessarily good news for him at this stage. He has another debate coming up next Tuesday night in Las Vegas at the Venetian Hotel. And this will be yet another opportunity for him to break out, as you say, and yet another opportunity for him to look like a guy who's desperate to do something different and doesn't know what to do. A little bit like Al Gore in the 2000 fall debates, when he got into a bad pattern with George W. Bush. And to a lot of people's shock and surprise, because he had been considered a pretty effective debater in the past, Rick Perry too, suddenly he couldn't seem to get out of his own way. Everything he did made him look worse and made George W. Bush, who was not thought of as being a particularly sharp knife in the drawer, look better as a debater.
Although the media didn't help much. I mean, the fact that we focused on the size, S-I-G-H-S.
Oh, the rolling of the eyes.
Yeah, the rolling of the eyes. And everybody said, well, gee, you know, Al Gore, we expect better from Al Gore. But so has this suddenly become a Mitt Romney versus Herman Cain battle for the nomination? That makes no sense to me.
It makes no sense. But on the other hand, that is where we are. And I think we have to be very careful in looking at these numbers and saying, well, we don't think these people are really for Herman Cain. We think they're attracted to the 999 because it's simple and because maybe they think they'd come out ahead under that kind of a taxing program.
Which they won't.
Well, some would, some would not.
New Hampshire certainly won't. I don't believe they have.
It's bizarre in New Hampshire, since they have no sales tax, to suddenly be paying 9% would be very upsetting. Plus, the 9% is going to apply on top of excise taxes for things like gasoline. It would be a very deeply felt tax by a lot of people. But nonetheless, because the hatred for the income tax is so high, particularly at the high brackets, and because people just like the idea of something that would change the whole system, rip it out, root and branch, that 999 has a certain amount of appeal right now. Plus, Herman Cain hasn't done anything really to eliminate himself from the list of options to Romney. And everybody else, to some degree, has.
I think that's the biggest story of all. The fact is not so much that Herman Cain has somehow supplanted Rick Perry as the alternative. The point is they're still not gravitating to Mitt Romney. Now, I would argue that the Chris Christie endorsement of Mitt Romney this week was interesting and perhaps powerful in the sense that a lot of social conservatives see Chris Christie as their hero, although why, I don't know.
Not on certain issues.
He's not a social conservative.
They like his attitude.
They do like his attitude.
They like his forcefulness.
But, you know, we keep talking about how these endorsements, I saw Terry Branstad, the governor of Iowa, said this week that he thought that Chris Christie's endorsement could help Mitt Romney in Iowa. Well, if Tom Harkin and Al Gore couldn't help Howard Dean in Iowa 2 days before the, and Howard Dean wound up finishing third in Iowa, in other words, endorsements are so overrated. I don't know what Chris Christie brings to this debate now that he's no longer the focus of will he run, will he, won't he run. But I still think that there's still an ambivalence about Mitt Romney that's not going away, and that's why his numbers have not. I mean, if he's the inevitable nominee, how do you become the inevitable nominee and you have 23% in the polls?
No, I don't think that he is at this point the inevitable nominee, because we are still looking at polls and debate performances and other things that may not weigh so heavily by the time we get to Iowa and New Hampshire. And by the way, we'll be getting there a little sooner than we thought we might. The folks in New Hampshire, their Secretary of State, Bill Gardner, this week said, hey, you know what? If Nevada's going to be as soon as Nevada is talking about being, which is the 14th of January, that's too close to our planned date of the 10th of January. We need to have a full week after ours before anybody else can vote. That's their view.
That's not their view. It's state law.
It's state law. And, of course, it's their view, and they incorporated it in
their
the state
law. Their view into state law.
And they are going to move their primary into December. Not just into the first week of January to mess with Iowa, but all the way into December and maybe even into the first week or two of December.
Yep.
Ken, how do you feel about going to Iowa and New Hampshire right after Thanksgiving, or instead of going to a Thanksgiving holiday?
It sounds great. It sounds romantic. It sounds ridiculous. It's not going to happen. And what's probably going to happen is Nevada will make the move.
They'll back down.
They have to back down. I think the RNC will throw its weight on, because it looks like Iowa is set for January 3rd, which actually
makes sense.
The way it was 4 years ago, the
exactly.
Same date, January 3rd. And so New Hampshire can go 8 days afterwards. Last time it was only 5 days afterwards. But they still have to have a week afterwards, and Nevada's going to have to move back. Plus the fact Nevada is a caucus, and they don't have to have it on the 14th. They could move it on the 17th, whatever it is. I still predict that the primaries and caucuses begin in January with Iowa, followed by New Hampshire.
All right. And who do we think will be the Republican contenders who are really serious candidates at that point? I'm going to start with Ron Paul, even though I don't think he will finish in the top one or two. too, but I think we can count on him having at least 10-12% and having his core support.
And don't forget, this is proportional delegates this year. It's not winner-take-all. So if you have 12%, 15%, you do get delegates, unlike in 2008 and years before that when you got zilch.
So what you can emerge from January not having won any of the events, but having enough delegates already pledged to give you a seat at the table going into February.
Right.
So we think there'll be Ron Paul. We certainly think there'll be Mitt Romney, who's running something like 45% in New Hampshire right now, looking very strong. Do we think Herman Cain will be among the top three?
Well, I mean, as much as I dismiss his candidacy, and I do dismiss his candidacy, the fact that it's happening 2 months from now, look, 2 months ago, Herman Cain was still an asterisk and perhaps a late-night comedian's joke. I still think that if the media talked about what the Herman Cain plan really entails, what it would really bring, and whether it would really bring revenue at all to the table, I suspect that his numbers would go down. But you know something? As I'm saying this out loud, maybe those kind of arguments won't be persuasive to Republican voters. Maybe they'll just say, look, Herman Cain is new and fresh, and I'm angry, and nobody's helping me out of my jam, and maybe Herman Cain is the answer.
That's possible. Here's an alternative view. I've been impressed by the degree to which issues, particular hardcore issues, have made a difference in this Republican contest up to now. For example, Romney being so hung up on the similarities between Romney Care in Massachusetts and Obamacare, which Republicans despise. And then what really did Rick Perry in? Was it merely his poor debate performances, or was it the image created by his position on the virus and the vaccinations in Texas, and his position particularly on in-state tuition for the children of illegal immigrants? Those things really stuck in a lot of Republicans' craw, and I think that's what drove the negative reviews of a lot of his debate performances. And now I think if people really do look at what a 9% sales tax would mean and how easily a 9% across-the-board flat rate on the income tax could be raised in future years, I think that's going to come to earth rather quickly.
I agree with you about the issues playing a big role in the debate, but here's the thing. Romney Care is still not popular. He's still not winning over converts with Romney Care, but his defense of it, his arguments, his performance in the debates, I think is just really fluid and polished and really, really effective. If Rick Perry had, a good, effective defense of his policy, that would be one thing, but he's unable to do what Mitt Romney is, just to be not so much glib, but just to be an effective defender of his views. And Rick, I'm really startled to see Rick Perry being as ineffective as he is.
Yeah.
Look, I don't think these candidates have a shot at the nomination, just like once Obama and Clinton were the candidates in 2008, forget
everyone
about
else
Dodd,
disappeared.
Forget about it.
They just fell away.
But I thought that Santorum, I thought that Newt Gingrich, I thought they were both pretty good in the debate. I thought they made effective arguments. I mean, sometimes they have throwaway lines.
Well, maybe if Herman Cain should stumble, and we have clearly 15, 20 percentage points just rolling around here available to whoever seems to be the most popular alternative to Romney of the moment. It was Bachman, it was Perry, now it's Cain. Maybe Santorum will get his month. Maybe Newt Gingrich will get his month. You don't really totally expect that to happen, though.
I don't. I think
Perry's going to make another comeback.
Possibly.
I think Perry will be back in the picture by the time we get to Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, that's very possible. And we haven't mentioned John Huntsman at all. John Huntsman could make some kind of a showing in New Hampshire. It seems to be the kind of state for him. But again, if Romney is the establishment candidate by then, I don't know where Huntsman gets his openings.
I don't either, but he will at least probably have at least some kind of funding, and funding is becoming an issue for these candidates staying in the race. I think it's very hard for Michelle Bachmann to raise money right now. That's a reason that she's not really looking like much of a threat going forward. Perry.
Do you agree that she has to win Iowa, and she's not going to win Iowa?
I agree. I think that her candidacy is in effect over. She's still in the race. She'll still be in the debates. She'll still be there in Iowa. Perhaps she could catch fire again, but I don't believe that's going to happen, and I don't see how she goes beyond Iowa. Just wanted to mention the fundraising issue here. Rick Perry, whatever his problems with debating, he has raised money effectively. He's raised more than the other Republican candidates, $17 million, despite not having been in the campaign.
Seven weeks, right.
But for 7 weeks of the second quarter. But President Obama and the Democratic National Committee in that third quarter raised 70.
Well, first of all, one, when you talk about Rick Perry, I think of Phil Gramm. Phil Gramm in 1995, 1996 raised a ton of money and never
what
made
it. What was a ton of money then, yeah? $20 million, right?
But I think he was breaking records back
then.
Oh,
absolutely.
And yet he went he was gone shortly after Iowa, I believe. Two, yes, you can talk about all the money that the DNC and Obama will raise, and they're talking about a $1 billion candidacy. But don't discount the independent third-party groups like American Crossroads.
Oh, not at all.
They will raise a ton of money.
And it will be for whatever Republican wins the nomination.
Right. Ideology aside, the non-Obama candidate, which will be the Republican nominee, American Crossroads, will raise a ton of money. If the Republican nominee loses to President Obama in 2012, it's not because he or she will be outspent.
Obviously, we've been obsessed with the presidential race this week, but we did have some interesting developments in some of these statewide races for the United States Senate.
Big news in Hawaii, the Republicans got their dream candidate.
Linda Lingle.
Oh, I was going to say Hiram Fong.
I was ready for you with Hiram this time.
But Linda Lingle, the former two-term governor of Hawaii, who left with very high popularity ratings. This is for the seat that Daniel Akaka is giving up after 20-plus years in the Senate. And she gives the Republicans a shot at winning the seat in Hawaii for the first time since 1970.
Yes, and who held that seat in 1970? That would be Hiram Fong.
I believe it was, yes.
Hiram Fong. And, of course, the Democrats will have to decide between Mazie Hirono, who is a third-term member of the House, and Ed Case, a former member of the House from Hawaii.
Who has run against Akaka before in the primary. He is not the establishment choice, but he does have a ton of money. And, of course, Linda Lingle, if she has the Republican Party in Hawaii is very small. There's some guy named Barack Obama who's running for re-election who comes from, well, allegedly comes
That's
from
right.
Hawaii.
He was born in Hawaii.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you buy that.
And so we would consider this one of the Senate races to watch, one
Absolutely.
Of the ones that could tip the balance in the Senate
well,
one way or the other.
It would be pretty remarkable, but it's a race that was not thought to be in play, and now it is in play.
Also in Wisconsin, another Senate race where a retiring Democratic incumbent has created a very highly competitive race. The Republicans now have a third candidate. They have their conservative from the 1980s in
Tommy Thompson,
the four-time elected governor. They have their conservative from the 1990s in Mark Newman, who was a House member for three terms in the 90s. And now they have a conservative of today. His name is Jeff Fitzgerald, not to be confused with Scott Fitzgerald, his brother, who's the head of the Wisconsin State Senate. He is the head of the Wisconsin State Assembly.
Right.
And he was the man pushing through a lot of Scott Walker's program last year that made Scott Walker so famous and popular in Wisconsin.
Well, he's popular with the Republican Party.
And
that's
he's also
right
popular
now.
In a sense. He is the focus still of politics in Wisconsin, where just this week the Democrats announced that they were going to, in fact, put all their weight behind a recall petition starting next month to try to get Scott Walker on the ballot for recall next year.
It looks like the Democratic nominee for the Senate in Wisconsin will be Tammy Baldwin. She's openly gay. She's backed by a lot of money from progressive groups. That'll be a race to watch. And, you know, we keep watching what's going on in Massachusetts, the Elizabeth Warren-Scott Brown race.
$3 million.
This is Elizabeth Warren has raised that money. I mean, not that Scott Brown will be outspent, but it'll be...
He will not be outspent.
It'll be a ton of money. And even though they're so polar opposites... That may be one of the key races to watch.
It's interesting.
Because
the
conservatives detest her.
Absolutely. And while the Democrats do not necessarily detest Scott Brown and can see him as a Northeastern moderate...
They detest the fact that a Republican has Ted Kennedy's seat.
Also, this is going to be a race that is going to be very highly personalized. It already has been.
Yeah.
And we have seen him rocked again this week by the... disclosure that his campaign staff had borrowed a large section of a speech given by Elizabeth Dole when she ran for the Senate some years ago and put it into his campaign biography. This is going to be that kind of nasty personal race that brings out perhaps the worst of the partisan differences in a state with some pretty deep partisan divisions.
It's a shame because everywhere else in the country, they're running on the issues and not doing the nasty personal stuff.
And it's a shame that Massachusetts can't get with the program. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
I took my troubles down to Madam Ruth. You know that gypsy with the gold captive. She's got a hat on 34th and Vine, selling little bottles of love potion number
999.